This story is inspired by actual events. The sun hangs low in a red sky over a small village.
Roses are red. Violets are blue. I'm about to fuck up, so what else is new?
A casually dressed, dark-haired man in his 30s leaves a converted barn building and bicycles along a country lane. Clive Owen, Helen Mirren, David Kelly, Green Fingers. The good-looking cyclist pedals into the deserted center of the village. His bike has a basket on the front and a sign that reads, "The Flower Basket." Having stopped and parked the bike against the wall of a florist's, the man looks into the window of the shop before smashing it with a litter bin that he hurls. Inside, he hastily puts together a bouquet of yellow roses, pricking his thumb as he does so. With the flowers resting in the bike's basket, he pedals off again, just as a police car arrives on the scene. Calmly, the man cycles through a narrow alley, forcing the police to reverse and take an alternative route. They pursue him along the banks of a grass-lined stream, but the man, breathing heavily now, cuts across a small bridge and evades the cops yet again. Now, an attractive middle-aged woman gives a garden tour.
This is what I call my memory corner. That forget-me-not reminds me of my first love. That coxcomb evokes my late husband. Oh, this dianthus came from a cutting my mother gave me. And I always think of my daughter every time I look at a primrose.
The fugitive cyclist pedals his way up the drive of an impressive country house. He gets off the bike and lays the flowers down by the door, along with a letter addressed to Primrose.
I know how hard this must be for you to understand. It's hard enough for me. I mean, why would any guy go and violate his parole when he's already spent half his life behind bars?
He's arrested.
It's about bloody time. Call it unfinished business, if you like. All I know is that nicking a bunch of flowers is a bloody sight different than what they put me away for at 18. The time I spent inside was hell on earth. But in a way, I welcomed it. I guess I felt I deserved it after what I'd done. After 15 years, I had accepted that this was what my life would always be. But a year before I met you, all that changed.
We have some news which might be of interest to you.
We're transferring you to Her Majesty's Prison Edgefield, a more progressive institution. We consider you to be an ideal candidate for the work that they're doing there.
Congratulations. You've been reclassified to Category D.
It's taken me a long time to get used to this place, and I don't fancy the change, so if you don't mind, I'll stay put.
Now, on a bright sunny day, the man, Colin, sits in a white prison van being driven along a leafy driveway. The van pulls up outside a large country house, and a prison officer opens the rear door. Two other prisoners, a young man and a large bald bruiser, precede Colin getting out of the van.
So this is what fresh air smells like.
Follow me.
Throwing a duffel bag over his shoulder, Colin walks over a welcome mat and into the building. Next, a man sitting behind a desk.
I'm Governor Hodge, and this is our head of lifers, Mr. Dudley. You gentlemen have been selected from prisons across the country to join other inmates in our open system. As you may have noticed when you arrived, there are no high walls, razor wire fences, or security cameras. Nothing to stop you walking away. Here at Edgefield, we function on trust. Show us you can be trusted, and you're well on your way to being paroled. However, if we detect any signs of antisocial behavior, you will be immediately transferred back to a secure prison.
A young woman appears with a trolley.
Am I dreaming, or are they serving us tea and biscuits?
Holly's from the WRVS. The Women's Royal Voluntary Service run the visitor's canteen. Holly, I'd like you to meet our new arrivals.
Hello.
Help yourself to tea, gentlemen. You must be parched.
Come on. Don't be timid.
I can recommend the chamomile.
Chamomile, what is it?
Later, Colin rips a piece of paper marked C. Briggs from a door. He goes through into his new cell, which has a large window with a pretty view. Throwing his bag down, he takes his jacket off and sits down to test the bed mattress.
Not bad, eh?
Yeah, it's all right.
An elderly man in a straw hat.
Yeah, my name is Fergus, Fergus Wilkes. Yeah. Dudley told me he'd be arriving today, and I've been looking forward to meeting you. My last bunkmate achieved his freedom over 2 months ago. And it's a bit solitary in here, you know? Yeah, it'll be good to have someone to pass the time of day with.
Listen, mate, I keep myself to myself. I'm not looking to bond with no one. I'm just going to do my time, keep my nose clean, all right?
Perfectly understandable. I felt the same way myself when I was your age. But after a while, I felt my own company pretty damn boring, if you want to know the God's honest truth.
Oi, watch it, old man! Fuck! For fuck's sake!
No, I'm really sorry. Sorry.
Jesus.
Fergus got Colin's bag wet whilst watering a plant. Now, in the canteen, Colin walks past Tony and Raw, the prisoners he arrived with.
I don't like that fella.
Strange one, isn't he?
What's he in for?
He's a minister's society, not the rest of us.
What's you in for, then?
Halfway through a six-straight armed robbery.
You?
Murder.
Same here. I'm innocent.
I'm not. Caught me on video, didn't they?
Fergus joins Colin at another table.
You're a bit of an early bird, aren't you? Oh, yeah. Shit, shaved and showered before I'd even put me 2 feet on the floor. Oh, by the way, word of advice. They're going to put you lads to work today. Do yourself a favour and steer clear of building maintenance. Laundry, that's the place to be. Come winter, when everybody's balls are frozen, you'll have the warmest seat in the house. I've a certain influence in laundry matters. In fact, the governor doesn't let anyone touch his shirts but me. Not a lot of people know that.
This is not a holiday camp. Everyone works here. No free rides, not for the governor, not for me, and certainly not for you lot. Whilst at Edgefield, you'll be required to work a job where you'll learn a trade and thus be prepared for employment upon your release. Together, you and I will find the job which suits you best.
We have half a dozen job options for you, Mr. Briggs. Yet Dudley informs me you remain unemployed. How so?
I don't care where you put me.
It's not a question of where we put you, Mr. Briggs. It's more a question of where you put yourself.
It's all the same to me. It doesn't make a scrap of difference whether I'm doing laundry, peeling potatoes, or carving rocking chairs out of oak trees. With my record, when I do get out of here, I'll be lucky enough to get any bloody job at all. So, you know, whatever.
You leave me no choice but to make the decision for you.
Colin's using a plunger in a toilet bowl. He stands with both his feet on the edge of the bowl, then tries again. But all he gets for his trouble is a face full of filthy water. From the lush green scenery beyond Colin's cell window to Colin himself lying asleep in bed. He wakes and sits up on one elbow, looking across the room to Fergus's neatly made bed. Soon, Colin's back cleaning the toilets, mopping down the floor next to the urinals. Outside, Holly's walking away from the building when Tony comes up to her with a football.
Where you going?
Home.
Can I come?
Very funny.
Why don't you stay and watch me play?
I already have. You're terrible.
Oi! A bloody marble, me.
Having demonstrated his pitiful ball control skills, Tony watches Holly go, then heads off himself. Now, it's dark, and Colin opens his cell door to see Fergus is still absent. He walks down a corridor and spots something through a windowed door. It's Fergus. He's lying unconscious in a hospital bed. A nurse approaches.
Can I help you?
What's wrong with him?
He's in for his chemotherapy treatment.
Cancer?
Yes. Along with retinitis pigmentosa, osteoporosis and arthritis in his feet.
Colin looks back into the room, then walks off.
Do me a favour, don't tell him I came here.
Back in the cell, Colin waters Fergus's plant. Another day. Colin sits polishing off a meal in the canteen. He's just put his cutlery down when Fergus appears carrying a tray and sits down next to him.
Did you miss me?
Didn't even notice you were gone. You were right about building maintenance. Stinks.
Thanks for saving me, plant.
I just gave it a bit of water, that's all.
Sometimes it takes very little to put things right.
Next, a man dressed as Santa Claus hands out presents.
Merry Christmas.
This
oh, not too much, that's it.
A Christmas party with children in attendance. One prisoner stands talking to a young woman.
Does he still tell all his mates his daddy's dead?
Go and speak to him, Jimmy. I don't expect too much.
To a young boy.
Right then. I hear school's going great.
Colin leans against a doorframe smoking as he watches the room. Fergus is dancing with an older woman while Tony and Holly dance together nearby.
Without a sign.
Tony, you've got a stiffy.
So?
It's against regulations.
A tattooed arm takes the stylus from the record and puts on a tape. Raw smiles as Fergus immediately begins some punchy, high-energy dancing. Even Colin seems slightly amused as Raw joins in with some heavy rocking. Fergus approaches Colin.
I'd like you to meet my sister Mary. I've told her so much about you.
Oh, no good, we found this.
Oh, you're becoming a bore. Well, you can have these anyway. Merry Christmas, Colin.
Oh, for fuck's sake, don't do this.
Too late. I've done it already, haven't I?
Fergus heads back to the dancing, and Colin, looking annoyed, unwraps the present. It's a sachet of seeds, marked Viola. Later...
You sure this is a good spot?
Give me the seeds.
Colin's used a spoon to gouge a shallow hole in some frosty soil outside. He empties the seeds into it, then stands up to take a cigarette from Fergus. Colin gives Fergus a light, then lights his own.
You all right?
Fine.
You know it's a total waste of time, don't you? It's so cold, those little buggers don't stand a chance.
They said that about me, didn't they? But I proved them wrong. I turned my life around.
Turned your life around? What are you talking about? You're a blind, crippled old fart who's been locked up all his life. Even if you get paroled, you won't have any time left to enjoy it.
I'll never be paroled, Colin.
What?
Nah. I'm one of the few in here who'll never walk out. I'll spend the rest of my days in Edgefield.
Now, as time passes, tiny green shoots push up through the patch of ground. They thicken and grow till the area is covered with wide green leaves. A football game. Jimmy scores a goal. Holly's serving tea.
Cheers, Holly.
Hello, Tony.
All right.
He gives her some violets.
Oh, it's really sweet. But it's against regulations.
I know it is, I know. We just put it in your hair.
She does so.
It's just lovely, Ivan.
Where'd you find it?
I found it quite near the pitch. So, I beg it back. They've got no chance without me. I'll see you later, yeah?
Fergus has been listening. He fetches Colin.
Spring is here.
What?
As the football game continues, Fergus leads Colin back to where he planted the seeds.
I can't see a bloody thing. I don't know why you bother with those specs.
They hide my wrinkles.
Oh, I've got better things to do, you know.
You should have marked the spot.
No, I'm sorry, old man. I've had enough of this.
Colin's stomping off, but is pulled up short by something he sees.
Colin? You found them, haven't you?
Yes.
And they're beautiful.
Fergus joins Colin, who's staring down at the ground.
Very.
Colin kneels down to take a closer look at the vibrant blue flowers.
They never stood a chance, Fergus.
I told you. It's all about defying the odds. Adversity is your ally, Colin.
What?
Make friends with your misfortunes. Otherwise, you'll always be angry.
The football.
Toss it back, will you?
Fergus throws it away.
What'd you go and do that for?
You ruined our bleeding flowers.
And what?
Look, from now on, this area's off limits.
Hey, lads, come and get this.
What's that?
The football pitch is now off limits. Hey. Wanna know why? Hey. In case we tramp over little pansies.
Oh, dear. Now, wouldn't that be a catastrophe?
Well, if it ain't the lilies of the field.
Look here. I don't think we give a shit about your fucking flowers. Go on, Ron!
Colin's laid into Raw. Dudley.
That'll do.
We don't look upon altercations very fondly here at Edgefield. Much less those resulting in bloodshed. And all over a pansy?
A violet, sir.
A double violet, actually.
A double violet?
And a scented one at that.
In this terrible limestone soil of ours?
Pity. And your football inflicted this damage?
We didn't see no bleeding flowers, sir. We were just playing.
Raw, if you and your teammates want to continue playing football, you will have to assist Mr. Briggs and Mr. Wilkes in their horticultural endeavour.
Oh, what?
Mr. Briggs, you just cleaned your last toilet. And you have your green fingers to thank for it.
That's bollocks, sir. These flowers are a fluke. I don't know nothing about
them. Gentlemen, a new work programme has just been born here at Edgefield. Gardening.
Gardening, sir.
That's right, Dudley. Gardening.
It's true.
Look at the buds on this.
And now I get a whiff of that.
Guys, listen, the governor is expecting a proper garden by next spring, and from what I've read, it ain't gonna be easy.
I'd set laundry duty any day over this shit.
This here is women's work.
Yeah, I mean, look here, Briggs. I think we'd gladly give up football. Yeah. We're gardening ain't the likes of us.
Jimmy, Tony and Raw get up and leave.
All right, Fergus, who are we kidding?
We're no bloody gardeners.
I saw the look in your eyes when you spotted those flowers, and it was love at first sight. We've been prisoners long enough, Colin. Let's be gardeners.
Now, think of it. This was the governor's idea, right?
Yes, sir.
And who do you think carries the most weight when your parole review comes round?
The governor.
Right. So, we plant a nice little garden, and you lads stand to get the government's personal recommendation for release. Not a bad idea, wouldn't you agree? So let's just get on with it and cut the crap, shall we?
We prepared a list of things we need, sir. Well, there's a fork and spade, obviously. Pair of shears. Some branch loppers.
Yeah, don't forget the hoe.
Oh, yeah, a hoe.
And a weed wand.
A weed wand. How interesting.
Oh, it is, Governor. This nifty little gadget looks a bit like a bicycle pump with a blowtorch on end of it. Just aim it at them nasty little weeds, pull the trigger, and bam! Nukes them right out of the roots.
Anything else, gentlemen?
Hats and gloves, I suppose.
Yeah.
Tony? Bottle of suntan lotion would be nice. Indeed it would. And have you calculated the cost of all these items?
Yes, sir. We've prepared a budget.
Very well. I, too, have prepared a budget.
A blank piece of paper. Now, Tony takes over from Dudley as he tries to open the lock on a large shed.
You want it, my love?
With great expertise, Tony picks the lock. Dudley opens the door and the prisoners step inside to examine the shed's cobwebbed interior and the broken old tools it contains. To Hodge.
Are you sure this is a good idea? Don't you think you're pushing it a bit, putting spades and forks in the hands of murderers?
The best place to seek God is in a garden. You can dig for him there. George Bernard Shaw.
In the shed, Raw sends sparks flying as he machine grinds the rust off a spade. Colin repairs a handle while Jimmy, Tony and Fergus work on more tools. Later, outside.
It's a go, wouldn't it?
What do you think, Colin?
I don't know, you know. It's not very good for sunlight.
We're in England. Don't build your hopes up.
They move to another spot.
Come on.
Yep.
No, it's not good.
My God, Susan. Have you read all these?
No.
Well, then it's high time someone did.
Georgina Woodhouse says it all comes down to two basic questions. What do you want your garden to do? And what flowers do you want to grow? Fergus, what do I want my garden to do?
I thought it was our garden, Colin.
80, 81, 82, 83, 84, 85. Don't tell me what to do, Briggs.
Look, just hang on a minute.
I'm tired of waiting. This spot's as good as any.
Why are you always in such a hurry all the time?
Because I ain't going to be here for the rest of my life like you. I'm going to get out there. I'm going to make something of myself.
Oi! I asked you not to do that.
I ain't standing on no fucking sidelines. I got just as much say in this as anyone. Look at me, right? The daffodils, they're going right here.
Daffodils? You said anything about fucking daffodils?
Hey! Hey, boy! Hey!
If you don't mind,
come on.
The old man will decide where the garden goes.
Next, all five men are cutting away the undergrowth surrounding the shed. Some use shears, while Tony and Jimmy slash at it with scythes. Soon, a plot of ground's been cleared, and the men get to work setting out the different sections of the garden. Fergus dabs sweat from his brow as the process of planting bulbs and seeds begins. Fergus waters the soil, and Raw, realizing he's lost his earring, digs about for it. Having found it, he blows it and pops it in his mouth to clean it. With great care, Fergus plants a bulb and covers it over, gently patting the soil down. The men then set off along a winding path they've created. Holly.
I'm leaving, Tony. Today's my last day at Edgefield.
Why?
Because every time I look at you, I go all wobbly. The feelings I have for you are totally inappropriate, and before I bring further dishonour to the Women's Royal Voluntary Service...
He kisses her.
Meet me in the woods behind a garden.
You see this? Hampton Court Palace flower show. Biggest in the world, it is.
Oh, my God. Well, let's enter.
You're dreaming, old man.
Look, I've never won an award in my entire life. This could be my big chance.
You want something short of a picnic?
Right, now it's time to Germany.
While Colin begins placing seeds in a specially prepared tray, Tony and Holly are making love in the woods. Hodge is gazing from his office window when Dudley joins him.
With a little cooperation from Mother Nature, we should have a jolly nice little garden come the spring.
Hodge hands Dudley a newspaper.
Her Majesty's Prison Edgefield more closely resembles life on a university campus than a citadel of reform for Britain's worst blights. The so-called open prison is, in point of fact, an open invitation to disaster.
Bastards.
Fergus to Colin.
Why does your family never come to visit you?
They want nothing to do with me.
Will you never tell me why you're in here? If God could find it in his heart to forgive me after what I've done, he's not going to quibble over your sins, lad.
You're sure about that, are you?
I killed my wives. I passed the first two off as accidents, but when I got around to the third, it wasn't the police that worked it out. I gave myself up. I'd come to terms with the fact that alcohol turned me into something terrible.
I'd say.
I'd be doing porridge till the day I die. Which could be any time, my friend. Not many more opportunities for heart-to-hearts.
I'm not the confessing type.
Sitting on his bed, Colin opens a small box and removes a photograph. It's a picture of two young men in a country setting. Jimmy.
It was starting up the vegetable garden next. Fancy them more than the flowers. That's what I'm going to do when I get out. I'm going to be a gardener. What do you think of that, John?
Mum says that he won't be in town away at university.
No, I'm going to be out in about 18 months.
That'll be up to the parole board, Jimmy.
Jimmy looks unhappy with this. Now, Colin's asleep in a chair next to Fergus's hospital bed. He wakes up and Fergus hands him a watercolour he's been working on.
I went ahead and painted it for myself just in case I don't make it to spring.
You'll make it.
The painting is of a flower-filled garden. It fades away and is replaced by the real thing. Hodge stands with the prisoners inspecting it. The path is now bordered by lush plants and their brightly coloured blooms.
Splendid. Just splendid. It's a great day for you, gentlemen. And a great day for Edgefield.
What did I miss? What did I miss?
I was just telling your colleagues how pleased I am with your horticultural endeavour, Mr. Wilkes.
We now have heaven under our feet, as well as over our heads.
Now, the lady gardener is signing books in a bookshop.
I'm such a fan, Mrs. Woodhouse, to Marjorie. I have one quick question.
I have an unruly cotoniester shrub. What should I do?
Go for the chop, dear. Give it a nice haircut. One must never be afraid to use one's loppers.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Woodhouse.
And who shall I inscribe this to?
To Colin, Fergus, Tony, Jimmy and Raw.
Raw?
Mrs. Woodhouse, I was wondering if you might be so kind as to visit a garden that my husband's employees have planted. They did it all on a micro budget, and they were completely inspired by your writings.
Hello. I'm frightfully sorry, but now that my mother's coming to an end, we're looking forward to a cup of coffee.
Well, splendid. We can give you one. We're only 10 minutes from here. Please. It would mean so much to the men.
Primrose, you don't say we're at an end. You say we're on a punishing schedule and we're running late.
I simply can't tell lies the way you can. I can't. I blush up like nobody's business.
Social know-how isn't lies, Primrose.
Following Hodge's wife's car, Primrose is driving her mother in a posh old motor. As they make a turn, Georgina Woodhouse notices the sign for Her Majesty's Prison, Edgefield.
The woman didn't say anything about a prison, did she?
Soon, watched by Colin and co, Georgina is inspecting the garden.
Such a jumble, all these disconnected dabs of colour. I really rather like it.
Who would have thought that the dogtooth violet would be so compatible with that straggling group of Daphne Miserium? Really, quite a success, considering that arctic winter of ours.
How about a big smile, Mrs. Woodhouse?
I beg your pardon?
I hope you don't mind, Mrs. Woodhouse, but open prisons being the brunt of such bad press lately, we thought Edgefield could use some good PR for a change.
If you'll just stand in the middle next to the prisoners.
Thank you.
A group photo.
So, Mrs. Woodhouse, what do you think of a garden made by murderers?
Murderers?
Just one or two of them, ma'am.
Raw smiles at her.
I really rather like it.
Perhaps you and your daughter would care to join us all for lunch.
Thank you all very much, but we're on a punishing schedule and we're running late.
It's been a long morning. We'd be delighted to join you.
Good. This way.
Mr. Briggs, have you always had green fingers?
Only when he picks his nose.
Don't mind him, ma'am. Too many blows to the head.
Well, actually, I just started gardening about 6 months ago.
Oh, then you have made strides.
Nothing you couldn't do, I'm sure.
I'm afraid in my case, the apple fell far from the tree. To my mother's profound disappointment, I'm a total disaster in the garden.
Really?
Oh, her father was even worse. Refused to get out of the hammock. Of course, the gin and tonics didn't help.
Later, Dudley lights Georgina's cigarello.
So, tell me, what stops you chaps from just, you know, absconding?
Well, that'd be stupid, Mum. There's too much at stake.
Straight back to a closed prison.
And we've all seen our share of dark days at Wormwood Scrubs.
All right, gentlemen. Back to your duties.
As the men head off, Colin shakes Georgina's hand.
It was an honour to meet you, Mrs. Woodhouse.
Watch out for slugs and sooty mould. They can absolutely make life hell.
Bye, and best of luck to you, Mr. Briggs.
Colin goes.
So tell me, who did what and to whom? It's quite a notion for a prison, isn't it? The tomatoes are more confined than the prisoners.
Now you sound like our local Member of Parliament. The only way prison works is to keep people locked up.
If our MP had his way, Gerald would never be allowed to let the men out on work release programmes.
Work release? I don't suppose this would qualify, but I've been commissioned by a lovely couple to do their gardens at Oslebury House. My own gardeners are so overextended, they're going to stage a mutiny if I ask them.
Primrose drives the prisoners up to an old country manor house. Georgina appears from round the back of it.
Hello! This way! Over here! Oh, Primrose, go and see if our plants are around. Sure they'd love to meet the boys.
No one's called me a boy since 1929.
So maybe all raw.
The rest of fuck all. That's where the mop walks.
Some people, they see this as just a mound of earth. But I, on the other hand, see it as the commencement of our homage to the goddess Flora.
Hello!
Hello!
Hello, everybody. Georgina, darling.
So kind of you all to give Georgina a hand. I'm Lawrence. This is Nigel.
How do you do? Anything we can do to make your time at Ozzelbury more enjoyable, don't hesitate to ask. I do hope you like shepherd's pie.
And we have trifle for dessert.
Right, well, excuse us. We've got work to do. Go on, off you go. Off you go. Off you go, Falstaff.
See you later.
Bye. Let's get started. No more lectures, and hosting yet another benefit for the Orchid Society is equally abhorrent. No! No! You can't treat wisteria so cruelly. If you cut into the hardwood, it'll never flower next year.
Tony, sorry.
I don't know. You'll have to discuss the dates with Primrose. Primrose! Primrose! Where is she? Oh, no. Oh! Oh, no.
Georgina thrashes her arms around.
Tea time!
Everyone rushes to her.
Just a little honeybee, Miss Woodhouse. Perfectly harmless.
Just a little honeybee to you, but it could be death to me or all. Oh, let it alone. I'll get it. Go.
We need to get her to hospital.
Raw picks her up. Later, it's dark as Primrose is dropping the prisoners back at Edgefield. Colin lingers in the car.
She'll be all right, won't she?
Yes. It's an allergic reaction, nothing too serious. The only time she gets a week's rest.
Fine. See you then.
Oh no. I'll be by tomorrow morning to collect your mother's orders.
The next morning, the five men are waiting by the road next to the prison sign. When the car arrives, they stow their tools in the boot and get into the passenger seats of the plush vehicle. Tony's last in, looking pleased with the luxurious transportation. They drive off. Later, from an upstairs window, Lawrence and Nigel watch Tony undoing his dungarees.
What the devil's he up to?
I'm only just beginning to imagine.
Tony, we do have a loo, you know.
Nigel, you're a spoil sport.
Hands in his pockets, Tony wanders through the hall of the house where a cleaner's working.
All right, sweetheart.
He climbs some stairs in order to examine a tapestry hanging from a wall. Nigel appears.
And that's from the Lady and the Unicorn series. The lady and her handmaiden are holding close-scented carnations.
Don't go for carnations much, me. Would you pay for it?
Oh, couldn't put a price on it. It's been in my family for over 400 years.
I hope you've got a good alarm system.
Falstaff's the only alarm we need. Atcha-boy.
Primrose.
How's everything going, Mr. Briggs?
Good. How's your mother?
They took her off the defibrillator today.
Glad to hear it. You don't fancy giving me a hand, do you?
Oh, no. I'd be more of a hindrance than a help.
Oh, don't be silly. Come and help me with this.
She helps him break up the root system of a plant.
No, don't be so timid. If you just go for it, just rip it apart. That's it. Right. Okay. Now, replace it in the ground.
They plant it in a hole and pad the soil around its base. Later, the prisoners are all asleep in the car when Primrose wakes Colin.
A home. Well, you know what I mean.
That's all right. It is my home.
I think Mother would be really pleased with what you've done.
Thanks, Miss Woodhouse.
Primrose.
It's a lovely name.
I despise it. Good night.
Guys, we're out of here.
Cheers, Miss Woodhouse.
Looking weary, the men climb from the car. Later, lost in thought, Colin lies on his bed smoking a cigarette. Tony is speaking on a telephone.
I know, babe, I know. Just wait, wait. Listen to me. Shh, don't go worrying about money, all right? I'm going to figure it out.
Oh, Tony. What have we done?
Silver foliage. It was quite clear in my design that I wanted purple foliage. When this clay soil goes cold in the winter, the silver will never survive.
Yes, it will. I've seen to it.
Have you? A problem that's plagued the gardeners of Gloucestershire for over two centuries.
I think that if you plant simple quartz crystals in the clay, they radiate warmth. They don't interfere with the roots, and they don't add any chemical compounds to upset the clay's natural pH balance.
Upon what do you base this conclusion?
I've been experimenting at Edgefield. There's loads of clay and quartz around there. I suppose that no one's ever bothered to mix the two together.
No. I don't suppose they have. Well, Mr. Briggs, you have quite a future.
As Georgina walks off with a smiling Primrose, the other men congratulate Colin. Next, a Union Jack flies above the building of the Royal Horticultural Society.
They are the most brilliant and talented prisoners you'll ever meet. The work they did for me at Oslebury House was simply stupendous. One in particular has a great deal of talent. I wish to sponsor them in their first show garden.
At Hampton Court. I can just see the front page of the Daily Mail on opening day. Her Majesty surrounded by murderers, rapists and such. Now there's a photo op.
It might do us some good. It's sure to boost attendance.
Well, I'm against it. We have the public safety to consider.
My personal recommendation has paved the way for many an upstart's entree into this charmed circle, including yours, Julian. And let us not forget what Her Majesty the Queen had to say on the subject. Gardening has been a national obsession for centuries. There cannot be any other occupation that absorbs equally every section of society.
Now, Georgina and Primrose stride through the prison canteen. Georgina's holding a printed invitation, which she presents to Fergus and the men.
We're going to Hampton Court.
Oh, brilliant! Brilliant! Hampton Court!
Raw and the lads are in the gym.
I'm thinking of a field of tulips with a bubbling brook from your throat middle of them and little wooden shoes overflowing with poppies.
What about doing something typically English but with a tropical slant, recreating Stonehenge in a way?
I was thinking about a vegetable garden.
Like on the moon?
A scented garden would be nice. Chock full of English roses, honeysuckle, lilies.
I'm seeing wildflowers, all shapes and sizes. Bluebells, sunflowers, daisies.
Daisies, tulips, fucking bluebells. I can't take this anymore. You lot are a disgrace to the prison system.
They all find this hilarious. Now, a man wearing a chef's hat opens a fridge door to find the shelves laden with pot plants. Raw and Jimmy are stowing yet more in a fridge in the shed. Plants and flowers are being stored all over the prison. Raw to Primrose and Colin.
Greek legend tells us that when Aphrodite was hurrying to the side of a dying lover Adonis, she was scratched by thorns as she pushed her way through a white rose hedge. And forever after, the blooms have been tinted red with her blood.
I
think a scented garden's a lovely idea for Hampton Court.
It was Fergus's choice. His sense of smell is one of the few things he's got that still works. Primrose, did you know that a white rose signifies purity? A yellow rose marks the end of an affair. And a red rose signifies passion.
Really? I never knew that.
Colin snips a red rose in full bloom and hands it to Primrose. His eyes are on her as she takes it with a hesitant smile. Later, in the shed, Colin talks to some violets.
How's that? Not too hot, I hope. Now then. This comes from Miss Georgina's private supply. The caviar of them all, it is. Now listen. I don't want you getting stressed out just because you're in the mother of all garden shows. I mean, it's hard to believe, I know. But just because you come from a little prison garden doesn't mean to say you can't compete with the big boys. You can. You've got just as much chance as any of the others.
You know, Susan, I think we've got a chance of a prize at Hampton Court. I truly do.
I hope so, sweetheart.
And now back to rural crime. Jane Cavendish reports from Otterbury House.
Can you tell us exactly what happened?
We arrived home from the opera to find the entire house ransacked.
They took it all. Irreplaceable artifacts dating back to the 16th century. It's a devastating loss.
Gerald.
Simply devastating.
I know the police are investigating, but do you have any idea who might have done it?
No, none at all.
Well, obviously, you have to consider the prisoners from Her Majesty's Prison Edgefield, don't you? I believe they were doing some work in your garden only a month ago. Isn't that correct?
The perpetrator of the crime was apprehended this morning in Bristol, boarding a train. He had a plan of Oslebury House on him. Says he bought it off one of the gardeners.
The police suspect one or all of you men. I'm giving you until tomorrow morning to sort out which of you sold those house plans. If I don't hear anything by then, you'll all be shipped back to a real prison. Is that clear? This couldn't have happened at a worse time.
What about the flower show?
Cancelled.
Hodge and Dudley go. The men all stare at Tony.
What are you looking at?
You were the only one of us who set foot in that house.
They invited me in for a piss. Boys, I swear my baby's eyes, it wasn't me. What, mate?
You short-termers always, always screw it up for us lifers.
Sarah, if the kid hears about that robbery over at Oslebury House, you tell him I had nothing to do with it. Right, nothing whatsoever. And you tell him about Hampton Court. Because I'm sick of disappointing him.
Raw and Tony are in their cell.
Raw, where are you going?
I'd rather sleep in the potting shed than stay here.
Raw picks up some bags and goes out the door.
Cheers, mate.
Next week, our guest is Georgina Woodhouse to tell us all about the Hampton Court Palace Flower Show, the blockbuster gardening event of the summer. The outdoor gardens represent the cream of the world's horticultural talent, today's big names, and the stars of the future, all of whom will be digging for victory.
As Colin listens to the radio, Tony's outside finishing a cigarette in the fading daylight. Carrying a heavy shoulder bag, he pulls the collar of his jacket up and sets off across the prison grounds. After a while, he begins to run. Next, on a table is a tabloid newspaper with Tony's picture on the front and the headline, On the Run. Hodge.
Minister, it's one black mark and an otherwise untarnished record.
That's still one too many from the point of view of public confidence. After all, the young man is still at large.
Don't close this in, Peggy. Most of these men are coming to the end of some very long sentences. They've got to be prepared. Well, if they're not, they're far more likely to commit further offences.
We've been in the outfit a long time, Gerald. You know I respect the work you're doing here at Edgefield. But until this thing cools down, all work release programmes in the private sector are suspended.
Colin is hard at work, using a pitchfork to break up some old roots on a patch of ground. Later, he sits in his cell, staring at a pile of gardening books. He pulls back the curtain from the window and moves Fergus's plant into the sunlight. Now, Dudley's present at Colin's parole board meeting.
Does the Secretary of State support or decline the prisoner's release?
Declines.
I see from your file you've served the greater part of your sentence. You feel you're ready to rejoin society?
As the four people sitting opposite Colin wait for his answer, he sits wearing an impassive expression.
I would imagine that I'm the only one here who knows what it means to have taken a life. You think about it every day. And you wish that someone would just come and take yours and get it over with. But then one day, you discover that you can give life. Create life. Grow something that needs caring. Feeding. To those of you sitting here thinking that rehabilitation through gardening just sounds too stupid to swallow, that's your right. But most of my life was spent in a bang-up jail, and a prisoner is all I thought I'd ever be. But today, whether you parole me or not, I no longer think of myself that way. I'm a gardener. I'm a gardener. Bloody good one as well. And to any of you wrestling with your own unresolved issues, you know, displaced anger, that sort of thing, I recommend it highly.
A fax headed with the words parole board reads, Colin Briggs is hereby granted parole. Dudley tears it off and reads it. Later, Colin addresses the garden.
Goodbye, lads. Do your best for me while I'm away. I'll try and visit you as much as I can. I'll miss you.
To Raw and Jimmy.
I'll miss you too.
Ah, go on.
A hug.
Hope I never see you again.
Raw hugs Colin too, and Colin walks away. Now, he's sitting with Fergus.
Make sure you bag the roses at the first sign of frost, yeah?
I won't forget. You can depend on me, son.
Colin puts an affectionate hand on Fergus's knee, then gets up to leave the cell. He stops and turns at the door.
I was 18 and totally wasted the night I caught them together. She was the girl I was planning to marry. He was my brother. My baby brother. I lost it. I just went for him. I didn't know what I was doing. When he stopped fighting back, I realised what I'd done. My mum and dad never spoke to me after that. They acted as if both their boys died that night. All I got left of him is a photograph.
Fergus goes to the table in front of the window and picks up his plant, which now has a single red flower. He takes it to Colin.
Take this with you. To the outside. I don't want it to die in here with me.
Fergus puts his arms around Colin, who then walks away quickly. Dudley.
Remember, Briggs, one small fuck-up and you'll be straight back to Edgefield. Now then, you sure you don't need a lift?
No, thanks.
Sorry about Hampton Court. It meant just as much to me as it did to you.
I know it did, sir.
Good luck out there.
Good luck in here.
Dudley and Hodge watch Colin head off.
We just lost our best gardener.
Colin standing by the roadside smoking. The plant and his duffel bag are on the ground by his feet. Primrose pulls up in the car. Colin picks up his things and gets in next to her. They both smile as they drive away together.
From the cradle to the grave.
Now, the car has a mattress tied to the roof as Primrose and Colin pull up outside a converted barn building. They climb some steps to a second floor door.
I hope you like it. It's all I can find in your price range.
Colin looks around a bare loft space with open rafters and a small window. He places the plant on the window shelf, seemingly content with what he sees.
Okay?
Yeah.
Primrose helps him carry the mattress up to the loft. Once it's been placed on the floor, they stare at each other for a long moment. Primrose moves closer to Colin and places a gentle, very tender kiss on his lips. She touches his face and gazes up at him. Colin returns her gaze as she kisses him again. Colin holds Primrose's face in his hands and they kiss some more. Holding each other close now, their kissing becomes more passionate, and they sink down towards the mattress. Now, Colin and Primrose are having tea with Georgina in a glorious sun-filled garden.
So, tell me, Colin, how are you adjusting to your new life?
Well, I think the transition's been made much easier by your daughter. Those who get out and have no one, I don't know how they do it.
Oh, this must be terribly hard. Mother, you always attributed the failure of all your relationships to the fact that none of the men were any good in the dirt. Well, I've found one who is.
Have you?
And he could really use your help finding him a job.
Primrose has taken Colin's hand. Georgina looks shocked and stunned.
Oh, my. Excuse me.
A bit dramatic, don't you think?
Inside.
That was very rude, Mother.
Oh, Prim, you know how fond I am of Colin, but honestly, dear, the man was serving a life sentence. God only knows what he did.
He killed his brother.
Oh!
It was an accident.
And who knows what might trigger it off again. I mean, it could be over the most trivial of things. I shudder to think of the consequences if you should happen to burn the Sunday roast.
It's funny how open-minded you are about him publicly. But when it comes to my happiness, suddenly he's judged by what he was and not by what he is.
what I like about plants. They don't answer back.
Primrose returns to Colin, who's now standing in the middle of a lawn. They walk together. Georgina watches them from a window, looking thoughtful. Now, Colin and Primrose lie together by a narrow river, watching a man trimming a squirrel-shaped hedge.
He's destroying that topiary. The border needs fortifying. I mean, the guy doesn't know what he's doing.
We'll find you a garden of your own, don't worry.
You've been saying that all summer and still I'm a delivery boy. I've been to every nursery and garden centre in the area, but, you know, I'm an ex-con. I'm not going to look in. What's it going to take? A personal reference from the Queen?
Cycling a bicycle with a large basket on the front and towing a wheeled basket from the back, Colin makes his way past a row of village houses. Later, he's dumping some soiled flowers in a bin outside a florist's when he sees a newspaper headline that reads, "Edgefield prisoners cleared in Ozzlebury robbery." Jimmy.
It was the housekeeper what gave the plans to her boyfriend. The wanker tried to blame us to save her ass.
So Tony was telling the truth.
Hey, did you hear about Hampton Court? They've invited us back to do a garden for next year's flower show.
No shit, you lucky bastards.
Yeah, but Colin, listen there. Are we going to do a garden without you, mate?
What are you talking about? You got Fergus? He's artistic.
Listen, Fergus ain't doing too well. He's gone downhill since you left.
Really? Tell him I'll pop in for a visit real soon, yeah?
All right. Nice one.
All right, I've got to go. Take care.
See ya.
On a notepad.
Roses are red. Violets are blue. I'm about to fuck up. So what else is new? They say that to abandon one's life for a dream is to know its true worth. I've got this crazy idea in my head that I'm good enough to win something at Hampton Court. It's a hell of a way of going about it, but then I've always done things the wrong way around, haven't I? Please forgive me for this, because I certainly won't forgive myself. I hope this is the last time that anybody ever sends you yellow roses.
Sitting in her mother's garden, Primrose puts the letter aside. At Edgefield.
Hi, boys.
Hodge.
I'm very disappointed in you, Mr. Briggs. Our hope at Edgefield is, once a man is released, he never returns. That said, I'm expecting you to pull out all the stops at Hampton Court.
Colin puts the plant down next to Fergus's hospital bed, waking him.
What's this thing doing back here?
It wasn't quite ready for the outside.
Colin takes a seat.
Welcome back, Green Fingers.
Jimmy and Raw show Colin a new addition to the prison grounds. A large greenhouse full of lush, flowering plants.
Well, I have to say, I'm a bit miffed to see how well you guys have done without me.
It ain't like the old days no more.
Colin.
All right, John. It's a fucking waiting list to get in here now.
Jimmy and me have been having a think, Colin, and we decided we want you to come up with a design for Hampton Court.
Gentlemen, the Home Secretary
and the Prisons Minister.
Most impressive, gentlemen.
The Home Secretary's quite a gardener himself.
Oh, you exaggerate, Peggy. I'm what you would call an armchair gardener. More an inveterate reader of other people's exploits than an actual tiller of the soil.
The Home Secretary's come up with an idea for Hampton Court.
Mind you, it only just hatched over lunch. I thought we'd go for a bit of the unexpected. A rock garden.
lots of prickly, hard plants with not the slightest hint of colour, representing incarceration, with the goal of freedom symbolised by a juicy red strawberry archway.
I didn't break my parole only to be laughed out of Hampton Court.
There's something much bigger at stake here than a flower show, Mr. Briggs. After years of fighting the Home Office, we've just recently begun to make inroads to ensure the survival of open prisons. Look, put your ego aside for one moment and give some consideration to the scores of inmates working through the system who've yet to experience a place like Edgefield.
Yeah, but a rock garden, sir. Do you honestly think we stand a chance in hell of winning anything?
That all depends on your definition of winning, doesn't it, Mr. Briggs?
Fergus unfurls a design for the rock garden.
About as subtle as a hemorrhoid. The only thing missing is a bloke with a pickaxe.
Laying out the garden, Raw and Colin work at the base of a statue depicting a prisoner wielding a pickaxe. Jimmy's painting a metal-framed archway. Later, he speaks to Colin.
So, Colin, was it like being with a woman again?
Well, it weren't that great if it came back here now, was it? Every day I miss her. Primrose was the greatest thing that ever happened to me.
Next, Colin to Raw in the greenhouse.
Now remember, these only need 1 hour a day under these lamps, okay? You got it?
Yeah, got it.
To Jimmy.
Hey, we need every last one. Hello. This archway's got to be bursting with strawberries.
Jimmy pops one in his mouth. Fergus.
Where do you think they'll bury me, Colin?
Well, Westminster Abbey's out of the question, I'm afraid.
I've been thinking of being cremated is the way to go. Dust thou art, and unto dust shall thou return.
Yeah, all right, old man.
Any female visitors lately?
No, I haven't.
The way you left things, I'm not surprised.
Fergus, do you think I'll ever be capable of loving someone?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I spent my life in prison. That's how it went. But you're different. You've got things to do. So the next time they let you out, don't go fucking it up.
Fergus looks pale and gaunt. Now, a number of white mice are crawling all over the garden archway, nibbling at the strawberries.
Raw!
Bloody hell.
We've got 2 weeks left. We'll never be able to replace them.
I did exactly what you told me. Timing must be broken.
Bloody mice.
I don't believe this.
Look, I've got a lovely bunch of red peppers. Maybe we can fill up the trellis with them.
Red peppers?
Oh, come on, Colin, don't lose the faith. Still got the cactus, look.
Colin! Oh, what now?
Fergus.
Raw's look of sorrow says it all. Colin walks away.
We said we'd walk together.
Shrouded in shadow, Colin sits in a chair next to Fergus's empty hospital bed. In the dark outside, a blue flame jets from the end of a steel burner nozzle. Someone carries it closer to the pickaxe statue and sets it alight. As the statue goes up in flames, the cacti are deliberately set on fire too. Now, Colin, Jimmy and Raw watch calmly as the entire rock garden is destroyed by the fire.
We'd help each other stay in strife. But each lover's steps fall so differently.
It's daytime, and Colin addresses a large group of prisoners from the remains of the rock garden.
From the looks of it, it appears that HMP Edgefield and Flower Show's just aren't meant to be. From the looks of it, we're all just a bunch of deadbeats. No opus. Drakes of society, right? Wrong. I know different. If Fergus Wilkes were alive today, they'd tell me not to give up without a fight. Adversity is your ally, lad. Well, I've had my absolute fill of adversity, and now I'm looking for some allies. Anyone here who wants to come with me and make history at Hampton Court Palace, step forward.
Without hesitation, Jimmy and Raw join Colin in front of the blackened archway. One by one, a dozen or so prisoners follow. Hodge approaches.
I believe I have the last word on the subject, Mr. Briggs. Good luck.
Crowds arrive at Hampton Court Palace for the beginning of the flower show. They mill about in their thousands, past marquee tents and around large rectangular water features. A sparse, chess-themed garden, then one that's abundant with plant life. Judges with clipboards stand discussing the merits of another. Everywhere, there is the drama and colour of every possible variety of plant and flower. Georgina's being filmed by a TV crew.
Savour the perfume and the pleasure filling the air at the gardening year's most anticipated event, the Royal Horticultural Show's Summer Extravaganza at Hampton Court Palace. Henry VIII's glorious palace by the River Thames has seen nearly 500 years of spectacle and pageantry, but I think even Henry couldn't fail to be impressed by this feast of flowers.
Hello. I'm Georgina Woodhouse, and I so remember my first flower show victory. I'd just given birth to my daughter Primrose, and I was desperate to get back to gardening.
Every year, Hampton Court Palace has a habit of showcasing something quite new and unique. And this year, we have found an entry that must be one of the most unusual in the history of the show. It was made without sponsorship, on a tiny budget, and from the confines of a prison. I am here with the men from Her Majesty's prison, Edgefield. Tell me, how does it feel to be exhibiting at Hampton Court?
It's terribly exciting.
I'd like to thank all my mates back at Edgefield who lent a hand.
Colin, tell me about your design for the show.
Well, it's a wildflower garden, and it's all about finding beauty in the most unlikely of places, and it's dedicated to our friend Fergus Wilkes.
Gliding past a road sign that reads, Wild Flowers Ahead. Beyond is the prisoner's show garden, a fabulous recreation of a wild, untamed country scene. Standing near a realistic reproduction of a concrete railway bridge is a lifelike statue of Fergus using a watering can. Colin treads towards it past a carefully placed abandoned car. He's surrounded by a jumble of colourful wildflowers.
Wouldn't be the same without you, Fergus.
From beneath the statue's hat, Colin's taken a container, the ashen contents of which he sprinkles about the garden.
Colin, Colin, hurry up! The judges are here.
The judges inspect the garden.
They hate it.
They don't get it.
They look more like rock garden types to me.
Trying to read those judges is like trying to unravel the mystery of the Mona Lisa's smile. See you at the gala.
What gala's that, then?
Sorry, men. It's for VIPs and non-prisoner competitors only.
Fine by me. I had nothing to wear anyway.
The gala takes place outdoors, with guests in evening wear sipping champagne and chatting. Susan spots Raw, Jimmy and Colin looking on from a distance.
Got a confession to make, lads. I left those heat lamps on too long, on purpose.
I've got a confession too. I let them mice eat all them strawberries.
Well, thanks for owning up, guys.
Just leaves one question, doesn't it? Who torched that bloody awful rock garden?
Colin just smiles. Suddenly, he spots Primrose with Georgina.
This was a mistake, Mother. I'm really not up to it.
Oh, darling, how are you ever going to meet anyone if you never leave the house? Look who's there. Colin!
Primrose tries to leave.
This is all about spite. Now that you have my blessing, you're deliberately trying to defy me. I know I've not been an ideal mother, but I do love you, Primrose. And so does Colin. He's just had a little bit of garden fever, that's all. I so want you to be happy. I really do.
Georgina embraces her daughter, then gently sends her off in the direction of Colin, who's standing nearby. Georgina watches as they meet near some railings.
Primrose?
Hello.
You look stunning.
Thank you.
In the gathering darkness, a royal brass band march along while Colin and Primrose step gingerly through some undergrowth. Primrose smiles as she takes in the prisoner's garden.
So, this is who you left me for. I hate to admit it, but she's fantastic.
They look at each other for a moment before moving further into the garden, absorbing the atmosphere. Primrose notices something up ahead.
Colin, you planted primroses. You were a total shit to leave me the way you did.
Second biggest mistake I ever made.
There's more to life than gardening, you know.
I know.
Colin suddenly seems uncomfortable.
Are you seeing anyone?
No.
Neither am I. I keep hoping that when I get out next spring, that you might be there waiting for me.
Smiling, she nods. Colin smiles back. He moves closer, and they kiss.
Marigold for the Millennium has just walked away with the silver gilt. So exciting.
And to Fontley's Nurseries in Hampshire, a gold for fuchsias and delphiniums. Congratulations. And this concludes the medal winners in all the major categories. Now, it is not every year that we bestow the Tudor Rose Award, but by unanimous ratification of the Royal Horticultural Society's judging committee, we have singled out a garden for that most coveted of awards. And this year, it goes to the Feng Shui Garden of Harmony.
Disappointed, the Edgefield Prison Group applaud.
We salute all the gardeners who grew for gold and got it, as well as those who didn't. So until next year, thank you for watching and happy gardening. So unfair.
Men. Excuse me. I got into the prison service some 30 years ago because I envisaged doing something positive with men like you. To force you to go to your core and rebuild your integrity. I lay far greater store in that victory than in any medal they had to offer today.
To Colin.
You're holding up rather well.
I have a lot to be happy about.
It's the best cat I've ever tasted.
Jimmy holds his boy close.
Thank you, sir.
Miss Woodhouse, do you think we made a mistake not going with a more typically English garden? You know, no graffiti, no crash cars, no concrete.
Oh, I like a bit of rough roll.
Excuse me. Her Majesty requests the presence of the Gardeners of Edgefield in the Royal Palace.
Her Majesty? The Queen?
HRH herself. She was quite impressed with your garden.
Holy shit.
Unofficially, she thought you were robbed.
Oh, no.
Come on, John.
Well, come along then, gentlemen. Let's not keep Her Majesty waiting.
I'm sorry, sir. Hmm? Gardeners only.
Excuse us, would you?
The Home Secretary stands aside, and Colin, Jimmy and Raw, shoulder to shoulder, set off for the palace.
I have so much sin, through and through. I have walked in the darkness too.
They follow three court officials through a gate and over a low bridge.
Wash my hands, it all is true. I have carried this weight.
Heading across the Hampton Court grounds with a happy air about them, the boys soon find themselves walking in step with each other. Passing a circular pond, Raw, Colin and Jimmy can't help but grin at each other. They find themselves walking along a wide path bordered by beautifully shaped trees. The boys eventually find themselves on a red carpet leading up to the palace doors. They walk up to the officials waiting there.
Bit of advice, lads. Don't forget to curtsy.
Colin, Jimmy and Raw head inside, and the large wooden doors close behind them. Prison gardeners went on to win silver and gold medals at the Chelsea and Hampton Court Palace Flower Shows, eventually winning the Tudor Rose, the gardening world's highest honour.